Story number 26, Göran from Sweden. The little town Nacksgård in Lolland is not New York in United States of America.
Göran was a young, quiet man from Dalarna in Sweden. He had a dream, and the land of dreams was not in Sweden at the time of our story. More than half of the young men he knew had left the village to go to America, and Göran was soon going to be one more. Göran looked around in the village, and he saw empty houses belonging to families who had now migrated to the land of promise. "Don't cry," he said to his mother. "I will return soon as I am rich enough to do so." In Göran's mind, that was only a question of a couple of years, and then he would be like Mr. Svensson. Mr. Svensson had sent a letter to the village with photographs showing his new house, his lovely new wife, his children, and a new brown hat with a brim broader than anyone had ever seen a brim in all of Dalarna, maybe in all of Sweden. Göran came to Stockholm and found the boat that would take him to the land of the Statue of Liberty. He had just enough money to buy himself a ticket on the open deck. So he found himself a place on the open deck together with families, young men like himself, and a few young women travelling solo to the land of promise. He rolled a blanket out as a bed and sat down on the deck, overloaded with impressions. As the time for departure came closer, the deck became packed with people. As soon as the boat left Stockholm and came into the Baltic Sea, the waves made the ship roll from side to side, and the people on the open deck had a hard time walking. Göran felt seasick. He couldn't help it. The sky whirled around over his head, and he tumbled forward and held onto the railing. He hung there, green and pale, and he felt like he was dying. They passed Gotland, Öland, and turned toward the west for the first time, still with Göran hanging over the railing, dying. He was sure he would never make it to America. They passed Bornholm, and the crew were now seriously concerned about this man looking so miserable and vomiting the whole day and night. As morning came, Göran was more or less unconscious, so they decided to bring him to the next town they passed. The ship waited as some of the sailors lowered Göran down onto one of the lifeboats, where he just hung over the side. The sailors handed the half-dead body of Göran over to the authorities and continued their journey to America. Göran found himself on the ground, and he could breathe for the first time since he had felt the sea shake his world. He sat up and looked around, and the first thing he noticed was the size of a load of sugar beet. "Wow," he thought. "Everything is bigger here in America." Then he stumbled to his feet and looked towards the town, where the impressive sugar factory filled the sky with an enormous chimney. And again he was impressed with the size of it. He was a little surprised by the size of the tiny harbour office with the uniformed personnel. He thought that there would be a giant hall with lots of people on an island where immigrants were welcomed to America. He stepped into the harbour office, still a little dizzy, and said, "I am Göran from Sweden, you know? America nice." Göran pointed at himself and said, "New York, New York, Statue of Liberty, me, immigrate." The man behind the counter said mildly in Danish, "Well, it may be true, but this is not New York. This is Nacksgård in Lolland. And you do not need to speak English. My mother was from Bornholm." So it was that Göran landed in Nacksgård and found his way out of town to the little village of Grasshave, where he lived the rest of his life and never once wished for another attempt to sail on one of those big boats full of Swedish immigrants that passed by on their way to America. Jörn rented a little house not far from the big farm, Ullingsgård. From time to time, there would be some work for him on the farm, and other times it was more quiet, and they didn't need his services. It fitted Jörn perfectly. He liked not to be too involved in the daily life on the farm. And on the other hand, it was good money when they did find a use for his skills, especially at the time of the weeding, and later the harvest of the sugar beet. Jörn found himself on the big farm nearly every day. To clean the sugar beet and later harvest them, a number of Polish women were employed. They worked hard, they never complained, and they were happy even though they were paid nearly no money for their services. So they were popular among the farm owners in Lolland and also at Ullingsgård. Jörn noticed the young women, but he was much too shy to speak to them, and the language was a problem. He spoke Swedish perfectly, or he spoke the dialect you spoke when you were from Dalarna in those days, but he had never learned Polish. One of the young women, with brown hair and a lovely smile, started following Jörn with her eyes when he came down with something to drink in the summer heat. One day after work, in the middle of summer, Jörn was on his way home from work when he noticed that the young woman was standing at the side of the road. Much to his surprise, she said she was waiting for him. So they walked in the flat landscape and had conversations like, "Here is very flat." And when she didn't understand, he would show her with his hands that the horizon was the same height from left to right. It was a fantastic walk. And it wasn't the last. Soon they started picking up a few words. Spać was sleep. Burak cukrowy was sugar beet. And oshanka was porridge. She learned how to count in Swedish. The number 7, sju, always made her laugh. Jörn had a day off from work at Ullingsgård and went into Nakskov, the biggest town in Lolland. It was a little bit bigger than a village at the time of the story, but it had a shop selling women's clothes, and part of that shop was devoted to women's underwear. He had 5 kroner with him, and he wanted to buy some pink bloomers he had seen in the shop windows last time he was in Nakskov. He entered the shop, and felt nearly as bad as he had felt on his way to America. He could hardly breathe, and he was just standing inside the shop, not asking for help, doing nothing. A statue from Sweden, in a women's clothes shop somewhere in Denmark. One of the staff in the shop asked him if there was anything they could do for him. He mumbled something totally incomprehensible for any Dane and left the shop. Outside, he was quivering with shame. Why didn't he have the courage to ask for a pair of plink bloomers for his maybe soon-to-be girlfriend? He ran through the town and found himself on some smaller roads of Nakskov. There were fine houses with very neat gardens and hedges, many hedges. As he was walking around, peeking into people's gardens, he stopped, paralysed. On a clothesline in one of the gardens hung a pair of pink bloomers, exactly the same as he had seen in the shop. There was nobody to be seen, so Jörn quietly slipped into the garden, took the pink bloomers off the clothesline and put them in his pocket. In the place of the bloomers, he hung a 5 kroner note. When the Polish woman received his gift and saw what it was, she blushed. Next time she met him, she had learned 2 new Swedish words, tack and underkläder, thanks and underwear. Jörn blushed, and they held hands. When the last sugar beet had been harvested, it was time for the Polish women to go home. The night before the departure, Jörn's Polish friend was nowhere to be seen. He asked her best friends, and none of them knew where she was. And on the day of their departure, Jörn stood by the gate of Olingsogor and hoped to get a glimpse of the young woman he had become so fond of. She was nowhere to be seen. Had she just hidden herself from him? Something had happened, and Jörn just couldn't understand what it was. The Polish women left in November and came back around May for the first weeding of the sugar beets. Jörn had gone all the way to Rybu so he could stand by the jetty when the young women arrived from Poland, and then he could drive with them up to the farm. When the Polish women came down the stairs from the ferry and stood on the pier, Jörn's beloved was nowhere to be seen, and they were all silent. Normally the Polish women were famous for all their chattering and their laughs. Jörn saw her best friend and went to her. She stood still, crying softly. Jörn asked her with gestures where his friend was. One of the young women knew a little Danish, and she came over. "She is dead," she said. "She killed herself. On the way over to Lolland, she jumped into the sea and drowned." "She was pregnant," said the young woman, "and we think that she was too embarrassed to show you. She liked you, you know. Just liked you. How could she be pregnant?" "We were never together like that," said Jörn. "No, but we think that the foreman at the sugar production team had his will by force," the young woman said. Jörn closed his eyes. He could hardly breathe. Then came the tears, like a river of sadness, like a flood of regrets, like a tsunami of hate against that man. He had taken the best thing Jörn had ever had. Her best friend gave him a scarf that he recognized, a scarf that she had worn when they had had their walks. The young woman said, "Take this scarf as a memory." Jörn watched the bus with the Polish sugar beet women drive away from the ferry. His idea that he could drive with them was gone. It fitted him well to walk the long distance from Rulbu to Grasshave. When it started to rain, it felt better. His tears mixed with the rain, and when he came home to the little cottage, he was soaking wet. The scarf was dry. Somehow he had managed to keep it away from the rain and his tears. It was the last time Jörn cried. He lived long in Grasshave and became known as the Swede. And in a little brown box, he kept her scarf. Every evening, he held it in his hands. Jörn never got married.